It is the Batter Up Podcast, NLDS Preview Edition. Willie P., Joe Patrick, and Caleb Johnson here with you as we get you ready for the National League Division Series. And the Braves trying to advance past the NLDS for the first time since 2001 after winning a playoff series for the first time in that time. Of course, the expanded postseason means that they're kind of back where they've started over the last couple of years. We'll see if they can get past that level. We say good morning to Joe Patrick.
Hey, Willie P., how's it going, man?
I'm well, sir. Hello, Caleb Johnson.
What's going on?
All right, guys. Real quick recap of the very short two-game series with the Cincinnati Reds. Braves did what they needed to do, just enough on offense. I know some people will be kind of quibbling with the lack of offense in game one, but the Reds had pitchers too. I'm more surprised by the way they won this series, Caleb, and I do feel like when you think about the way that the Braves won this series, it's the way that you need to win all postseason series: excellent pitching and just enough hitting.
Well, see, that my whole thing is, should we really be that surprised? As far as the Braves only had to win two games with solid starting pitching and then turned it over to the bullpen, it was one of those, based on the performances of, you know, I think game one was the real concern, based on, you know, we didn't know how Max Fried was going to look. He looked spectacular. And then you get into game two, and yeah, then you find out that Ian Anderson is truly the stud that we had hoped that he would be. So I wasn't necessarily surprised that starting pitching was what carried through both of those games. It's just one of those, now that we move into a five-game series or a potential five-game series, now I'm like, okay, what is game three, potentially game four, going to look like?
Yeah, of course, Joe, go ahead.
Well, you're right that a 5-game series is going to test this rotation a lot more than it was. Like, you weren't even going to really have to withstand the real tests that we've known this team is going to have to face if it was going to make a late long postseason push. You know, now there are the questions of, does Max Fried come back around and pitch game five on short rest, you know, or if it's not him, like potentially somebody else, you know, those are the kinds of questions that the Braves are going to have to be asking now, as to those questions didn't really exist in the first series, in a 3-game series. You know, you only carried three real starting pitchers. and maybe like if you want to categorize Josh Tomlin as that, who could have potentially started a game or something like that. But anyway, like the starting pitching is going to be tested. I think the question that I've been facing on radio hits and stuff like that, and what I want to pose to you guys, is kind of, do you have more confidence in this team based on the way that they won, getting the starting pitching that you did out of guys like Max Fried and Ian Anderson? Or is it like, oh man, that's a sign that we are going to have to pitch to that high level, and I am not sure if we are actually going to get that again?
I feel like the team that we just beat is better than the Marlins, but I do feel like playing the Marlins scares me more because of the fact that the Marlins have a little bit of mojo. They've got that whole bottom feeders mentality. They're dealing with the fact that a bunch of teams don't really know how to get around their lineup. And also, they're featuring some pitchers with very little tape on them. Now, the thing that's fortunate for us is that we know them very well. We played them 7 games in the month of September, including 4 in the final week of the season. Went 3-1 in that stretch, including clinching the NL East. But there's just something about familiarity when it comes to the postseason that I don't always like. I would have preferred to see the Cubs. I thought that the Marlins were a better team than the Cubs for that reason. And I do feel like that seeing the Cubs would have been a better matchup for us, just because of the fact that the devil that you don't know, at least in the postseason, is better than the one you do. I do feel like the familiarity does favor us in some facets, but I do feel like their pitchers knowing our hitters gives them an advantage that I just wasn't prepared to see. Though I do believe that you do get a little bit of confidence from the way that the Braves won. I just, the thing that worries me, and I'm sure Caleb worries a lot of Braves fans, is they don't want to see the offense go into the same kind of malaise that it went in against the Cardinals a year ago.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. However, I would say it would be a concern unless you're playing the Marlins. And I think that was why I felt so comfortable seeing this Marlins team. Is sure, they're hot right now, and sure, they've got the cool bottom feeders thing. It's kind of like how the Nationals had the baby shark thing last year, and every other team before them has some sort of little thing that kind of carries along with them that they take into the postseason. That's fine. But the Braves have multiple times put gigantic scores up on these Marlins teams.
True.
And so I think knowing that in the back of your mind, and knowing that in game two against the Reds, that the bats finally broke out, it just, to me, it kind of gives you a sense of comfort. And the big thing that me and Joe were talking about at the end of game two when we were doing the Facebook Live was that with all of the new uncertainties that have popped up with them playing in Houston at Minute Maid Park and this whole bubble environment, the one thing you're going to know is that the team you're playing against, you've beaten more times than they've beaten you this season, and you've put a bunch of runs on them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Brian Snicker was talking about it when he spoke with media on Saturday. And, you know, he his whole thing was that it works both ways. Like, where, yes, the Braves do feel confident, obviously, against a team where you face them, you have really clear scouting instructions, you know kind of what pitches are coming, or generally, you know, you have better approach to your at-bats because you've seen these guys before. But that works both ways, and it's going to work for the Marlins as well. And if you're the Marlins, you'd surely rather be seeing the Braves. I mean, it's going to give you confidence that, you know, you lost four of 10, you know, but that's not terrible to a team that you're going to be seeing in the NLDS, as opposed to potentially them getting matched up against any other team, especially like the Padres or the Dodgers. So I think that it works in the Marlins' advantage as well. And I don't know if it kind of equals itself out in terms of the confidence. I mean, I do think if you're the Braves, you have to feel confident. And it was something that we didn't talk about as much before the postseason series started because we wanted to focus on the Reds. But, you know, the Braves, I think, have to feel confident whether they were going to be playing the Marlins or the Cubs in this series, because either one of those teams is clearly just a worse team than you would be facing if you were in that upper quadrant of the playoff bracket. So, you know, I think that it's just going to be a hard fought series. I think the series is going to be representative of two teams that know each other very well. And you're just going, and also the Marlins are kind of like they kind of remind me of like a miniature version of the Braves. Like they kind of have these dynamic players, young players. They're going to run. They're athletic. You know, they kind of do. They're very dynamic in a way that I see that the Braves are as well. So I think that for that reason, it presents a very interesting matchup.
Yeah, not exactly a group of a lot of household names. You do have a guy like Starling Marte, who's obviously had success elsewhere, and a former Brave in Matt Joyce, but their leading home run hitter is...
Do we know Marte's status? Because he got hit on the hand in the game two or game three?
He apparently was able to bat in the final game of the series against the Cubs, but I don't know how many more days of rest, if that will allow him to be in the starting lineup come Tuesday night or not. The leading home run hitter for them is Brian Anderson, 11 homers, 38 RBIs. He's one of the few guys who actually got a full season in. Much of their roster was riddled with the COVID outbreak that they had to start the season. Jesus Aguilar is somebody also you have to account for, a doubles guy and a home run guy. Same thing for Miguel Rojas. But like we said, guys, you know, it's a situation where you have kind of a death of a thousand paper cuts type lineup, but more so than the Reds, this team does have some pop, and you go into a ballpark in Houston that, at least for right-handed power hitters, is very friendly. How much does the ballpark and the venue play into this matchup between the Braves and Marlins?
Personally, I don't really think it makes all that big a difference. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just kind of the approach I take, because you know,
you've seen those Crawford boxes in left field, man, only 315 feet away.
No. I mean, I definitely think it matters in terms of, like, that's just the way the ballpark plays. But I'm not convinced that it's going to, like, be a difference maker one way or another between these two teams. Like, who knows how many balls get hit out there. But that's how I kind of approach these things in general in sports, where it's like there could be a factor that does play out to one team's advantage, but I think at this point it's kind of impossible to predict that. And I mean, it's kind of funny when we make these predictions, the things that we were talking about on this podcast before the Red Series definitely didn't like come to fruition. So you know, but I think that it will be interesting to see. Again, going back to what Brian Snicker said at the very beginning of the season about the teams that are able to adapt are going to be the ones that have the most success. And going into this bubble environment is a perfect example of that, of like which team is going to be able to You know, just take it all in stride. Take this abnormal, weird circumstance and make it normal enough so that they're able to perform their best. And I think that that's going to be a huge factor.
Well, I was going to say that, like, on the one hand of this ballpark, it seems like the with both teams not having played there this season, that should be the great equalizer. The one thing that I think will lean a bit towards the Marlins is the fact that they're used to playing in a dome, like in a covered stadium, whereas the Braves have played outdoors. So is there any, you know, inkling of better reads and things that the Marlins are used to dealing with those lights more often that could help them? I mean, maybe, but I really don't think it's anything that would truly, you know, pivot the series one way or the other. The other thing about the Marlins is that, you know, they've gotten a lot of credit for the offense that they had against the two games against the Cubs. If you just look at it, they really only scored in one inning, the seventh inning. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those, if the Braves circle the seventh, you know, kind of put the focus on there, you know, you kind of think, well, they should be all right.
Yeah, well, plays into the Braves bullpen very much so.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly. I know that Will and I have talked about this. I know Will's been mentioning it on his show, but the Braves are undefeated this year when they have a lead after six innings. So, yeah, it's kind of strength versus strength in that respect. But, you know, it will be interesting. Again, something that Brian Snicker was talking about on Saturday as it relates to the bullpen is, you know, it's a longer series. So he's going to have to, and they're all back to back. So you're not getting any of those rest days for your bullpen. So when you use a guy, you've got to be thinking kind of down the line how it affects it, his availability for the next game or the game after that, if you have to use him again. And, you know, he said that he'll use a guy 4 out of 5 days, you know, like some guys are probably going to be needed in that scenario. I think, you know, your top guys, Will Smith, Mark Melanson, those guys especially, will be involved in that group, I'm sure. But it's going to be a different challenge for this bullpen, and you just it'll be interesting to see kind of how they're able to deal with that kind of workload.
Yeah, even in the last series, Snitker even said that he wouldn't have ruled out using guys 3 days in a row if he had to, just based on the fact that you kind of have to have all hands on deck in that scenario. One big absence in the Marlins, you mentioned, of course, Marte, Joe, but no Jose Urena. That is something that is, I think, a lot of a welcome sign for a lot of Braves fans, just because of his antagonist nature that at least relates to Ronald Acuna. Their pitching staff, again, not exactly one that you look at and say you're going to be completely scared by. They're going to throw Sandy Alcantara in game one. It looks like in game two, they'll go with Sixto Sanchez. But the fact is, you're dealing with a pitching staff that doesn't really have an experienced frontline starter. How much is Urania's departure from the roster at least lean things more in the Braves' direction?
I think it's a huge loss for the Marlins. He's arguably the best starting pitcher you have. I mean, he would definitely be a guy that you'd be trotting out there in one of these first games. So, you know, I think that it's a big loss for them on the field. I am kind of torn about it, because for as much like emotions and angst as his presence,
antics. Yeah, just antics.
His mere presence on the field brings out in Braves fans. I find that interesting. You know, I find it as a fun storyline, and you hope that sometimes his quote unquote antics don't end up like injuring a player like Ronald Acuna. But it's fun. You know, I think it makes the game more exciting. Not that you're kind of there to see that, but I'm kind of disappointed that he's not going to be involved just for that reason.
Well, I was about to say, my thing with Urena not being there is just based on, I mean, this season alone, the Braves tend to score a good number of runs when he's specifically
pitching.
That's true.
They do hit him.
Yeah. You know, that was the last time I pulled it up. The last time that they saw each other was on the 27th or 22nd of August, and the Braves put 4 runs on him and ended up scoring 11 in an 11-1 win. And, you know, I'll take that. Right. You know, it's one of those, like,
Yeah, he didn't pitch well this year. He was only 0-3 this year in five starts. And again, he was one of those 17, 18 or so guys who didn't start the year because of COVID-19 outbreak. So his season was significantly curtailed. The best guy that they had, at least lengthwise, or at least the guy who made the most starts, was Pablo Lopez. He's probably going to factor into game three, though he's somebody who I feel like, again, kind of slots behind Sandy Alcantara, who has pitched very, very well down the stretch, and Sixto Sanchez, who has made just seven career starts, but looked pretty sparkling in each of them. And that's, I think, the guy who, if you're looking for a game that could possibly swing in the Marlins' direction, I feel like game two is the pivotal game of this series. Him against Anderson. Look, Ian Anderson has answered the bell every time we've asked it of him. He's somebody who has never found it too big. The moment is never too big for him. I think you're right now, I don't want to say you're flirting with doom here just because he's done so well. I feel like you expect him to do well once again. But if there's a game, at least that if you look at that one, could possibly concern me, it's that one, just because of the fact that I'm hoping we haven't exercised all the pixie dust that we have at least available to us when it comes to Anderson, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I think I would expect another really solid start out of Anderson. And I will again also mention that when Brian Snicker talked to the media on Saturday, you know, these pitchers that didn't pitch in the wild card series have been getting some work in these workouts, simulated games they've been throwing at Truist Park on Friday and Saturday. And Brian Snicker seemed impressed with Kyle Wright's simulated game. Like he didn't talk about it in depth, but he was like, man, he looked good. So that's encouraging, because Kyle Wright's a guy who obviously is going to be a key figure in this series, although he wasn't in the last series. I think he's going to be a huge pivotal point for the Braves. And he's just really been improving drastically over the last month or so. I think his last three or four starts that he made in the regular season were clear progressions forward for him, which is great to see, because how many times have we seen Kyle Wright take one step forward and two steps back during his mm-hmm. Braves career? It was great to see him just have that continued progression, just going from point A to point B to point C, just progressing. And again, what we heard from Brian Snicker sounded encouraging. So it's going to be fascinating to see how these pitchers get on, you know, from the Marlins side as well. These guys just are young pitchers. Brian Snicker said that they are the X factor that makes them dangerous in any series they're going to play, because, you know, these guys can go out there. And, you know, I think when I look at the Marlins, I look at inconsistency. Like, they could go out there and give up 29 runs, or right. they could go out there and, you know, pitch a no hitter or something. Like, you there's just such a wide variance in what you're going to get out of those guys. So I think for that reason, and probably for the Braves as well, you could say the same thing out of their starting pitchers. So I think all that makes for a really exciting series I think we're going to get.
Is there any specific Braves hitter that has to get back on track for the series to, you know, to swing the Braves way?
Dansby Swanson.
Mm. Yeah,
that's the guy I'm looking at. I feel like you saw something out of Acuna in game two, same thing out of Ozuna. I got to see the regular season Dansby in this series if it's me. That's just my opinion for that.
He was a guy I gave a shout out on Dukes and Bell last week talking about, or maybe it was it was because Carl definitely asked me the question, so it must have been 2 weeks ago. But
2 weeks ago.
You know, he was a guy that I had pinpointed as a guy that would be key in the Red Series, and I don't know if he got a hit.
He did.
He got one.
Did he? Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah, that's kind of been my whole thing with, I mean, is this team going to be fine to make a true postseason surge to the World Series with Markakis hitting like he is? It's one of those, like, is that just gonna have to stay a hole? I guess that's just gonna, oh, all right. Yeah, I mean, he's turned into Ender, quite honestly.
Right.
Like, if everyone wants to rip my guy,
wow.
If everyone wants to rip my guy, Ender Inciarte, who
self-proclaimed,
you know,
member and founder of the Ender Inciarte Club, throwing that shade on cakes, man. I don't know if I can allow that.
Markakis is true. Like Ender, but it's like maybe he can hit a ground ball to the right side to move to advance a guy to third. You know, like,
right?
It's like maybe
at
he
least
can. Mar- maybe
at least
can
cakes
sacrifice.
Is fundamentally sound.
Yeah,
he's hit. I was about to say, didn't he hit into a crucial maybe. Double play game one against the Reds? Like,
yeah. I didn't say he was clutch. I said he's fundamentally sound.
This is the paradox. Is paradox the right word? I don't know. This is the tough situation that it comes down to with Brian Snicker and Nick Markakis on the same roster within the same organization. It's just
he's going to fall out of bed and hitting 280. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember when we were doing that and we were making fun of him saying that?
Yeah. But I don't know.
It seems like forever ago.
I would love to see Christian Pache get more playing time, but this is the playoffs, and Brian Snicker is going to be rolling Nick Markakis. I don't even know why we should even entertain other ideas, because I think we all know what it's going to be.
How?
I was just going to say some playing time.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's kind of. So I have something here with the Pache thing, because when I saw him on the NL wildcard roster, I thought, those sneaky, grimy Braves, man.
Oh, like, yeah, you weren't here to get to talk about this. I forgot.
I wasn't. I really, really wasn't. And I do feel like that's just a sneaky, grimy little thing. That's basically admitting to everybody, to God and everybody, hey, we don't really believe in Ender Inciarte, but we couldn't get anybody to take him, and we didn't want to start the clock on Pache. And that was incredibly grimy stuff. And it's the stuff on the business of baseball side that just makes me squirm. Like, I hated that. I hated seeing that. And not necessarily for the kid, but it just tells me that the kid got screwed this year from playing in the regular season.
No, Will. Me and Joe kind of already talked about this a little bit, obviously, when you weren't here. And the point that I made was, at the time, you had Ender, who couldn't be optioned. You had his contract, which couldn't be traded, and then you couldn't spend a decent amount of time carrying both Pache and Ender on the roster. Like, that was a valuable roster spot to have, I'm sure, for an arm. And so there's no reason to bring up Pache when you can't do anything with Ender. And quite honestly, I mean, offensively, the little bit of time that we did get to see Pache this year didn't really wow anybody. So
three games.
Exactly. So it's one of those, I mean, you know what you're going to get out of Ender.
Nothing. You're going to get nothing out of Ender.
Yeah, you're going to get some defensive comfort and just no offense. And so it was like, yeah, there's no, it didn't make sense when the clock was running.
Was it defensive comfort in Yankee Stadium, Caleb? Was it defensive comfort
there? Look, hey, you want to start pointing to guys who are making defensive blunders. Look no further than Nick Markakis. Like, that's, yeah, I mean,
on Nick Markakis. Well, I've already said that he's old and he'd be.
Well, I was about to say, you know, what I've done is I've pushed the frustration everyone has at Ender. I'm trying to like shove it in a different direction. And that's just the easy one to do right now. But yeah,
deflecting.
It's one of those.
You are deflecting, Caleb. Yeah. You are total deflection right now.
But it is, but it's
he's protecting
it's
true. His adult son.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought about, you know, we've been doing the Zoom stuff. I have an Ender jersey, and I really almost considered wearing it, you know, like crisscross style, wear it backwards so the name plate is across my chest kind of thing, but I haven't done it so far.
A decent reference out of you, by the way.
Yeah, I
were
know.
Were you alive when crisscross was? Okay.
Yes, I was. Okay. I might have been a baby, but I was alive. Okay. Also, I know my history in general. But getting back to the Ender things, like, yes, like every player is going to have those defensive blunders, especially out in outfield. I mean, Marcell Ozuna is not exactly a gold glove out in left field. But, so it makes sense, though, why the Braves did that. And then they showed their true colors by being like, yeah, Ender, you're not on the roster. And Pache will at least have you pinch run.
Yeah, I mostly just felt bad for Pache, that clearly the circumstances on the roster just didn't prevent him from playing more this season. And maybe there was some kind of some service time shenanigans also being considered.
Manipulation. You could say it's manipulation.
sure. I mean, yeah, that would be the argument. But I really think that the reason that he was not more involved was down to really the inflexibility that Ender Inciarte kind of presented. Just his contract just creates a little bit of friction within for a player just like Pache, who would he's like the exact kind of player that Ender Inciarte's contract kind of denies. So t- tough luck for him. But I think clearly, what to your point, he's the better player, as judged, as evidenced by the fact that he's on this postseason roster, and he'll be playing in the biggest games of the season, this postseason, and Ender and Cierte won't, and he will be playing in the biggest game. He'll be playing next season. I have full confidence that Christian Pache will be Braves player day one next year.
And just to clarify, them putting him on the postseason roster means nothing for his service time. So that's part of the reason why the Braves can get away with those, as you termed it, shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
All right, prediction time. Final 5 minutes. What do we think is going to happen? First, Joseph.
I'm going to say Braves in... Oh, man. I want to say either Braves in three or Braves in five. I struggle to see the Braves winning a game four because of the way that their starting rotation lines up. So I'll say Braves in five.
CJ?
I think that Bryce Wilson can step up to the moment.
Oh, snap.
Because it's the postseason. And I'm
it's only
saying,
1 October.
Yeah, I'm saying Braves in four.
Okay.
Just because I honestly believe, and this is much like I thought with the Red series, and so I'd love to be proved wrong, but I think game one could be problematic, and I think the Marlins could pull out a game one, and this thing ends up taking, game one or game two, I think, are definitely Marlins. But
I think the most disastrous thing that could happen for the Braves is in that game one, where, you know, you got a guy like Max Fried, who granted he threw great in against the Reds, but still doesn't have a huge, you know, steady workload coming into this series. So if he gets knocked out early or something, you have to heavily rely on the bullpen in game one and you lose that game. I think that's kind of the most disastrous thing. Again, with Titan time frame, any team that really has to exhaust its bullpen early in the series is going to be in trouble.
I say Braves in four. I'm very much in the similar vein of Caleb. I do feel like they'll win game one. I feel like Sanchez will outduel the kid Anderson in game two. I feel like you'll get a representative performance from Kyle Wright, maybe some late-game heroics in Game 3. And then between Bryce Wilson and Waskar Yanoa, you patch together six or seven innings, and then you nail it down with your final three, and you go on, you face the Dodgers. I feel like Braves in four is the confident ploy. If there is an avenue for victory for the Marlins, guys, what avenue is that? Is it getting to their starting pitching or beating the bullpen? What do you think is more likely?
I think the way that the Marlins would win the series is just through getting really great starting pitching, essentially outpitching the Braves, and then just doing those really annoying things that teams like the Marlins do, where you like steal bases and just kind of outwork the other team. Like, I don't just grind out runs, manufacture those runs, and then get the starting pitching that you need.
I was about
football,
to say those really
football term sounds like stealing possessions almost kind of thing. Well, that's very Dan Quinn-esque.
I was about to say, Joe, with the they do those really annoying things, you know, just that those fundamental baseball things.
Yeah.
You know,
running
the base pads. but for real though, I mean, if the Marlins are gonna win, they're gonna get to starting pitching. I think at least in my opinion, I think that once the Braves relievers get out there, things will calm down or be all right. But if they can get to starting pitching and put up some big numbers, and also I don't even know that their starting pitching has to be great. Just for whatever reason, if the Braves decide that their mentality is going to be aggressive and they start taking strikeouts, that could be a thing that really puts Atlanta in some big trouble.
Yeah, they really tried to ambush the Reds pitchers in the last series, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Had Nick Markakis looking stupid with some swings.
They were
not. I'm not happy with this Nick Markakis slander.
Hey,
I still can't get over some of the Braves at bats in that series. So bad. Like, the worst at-bats I've seen from these guys, a lot of them,
all season.
Because it was swinging for the fences, or just, like, they were trying to be Superman. And it's weird, too. I know we're wrapping up or whatever, but it's weird for a Brian Snicker-managed team to do that. Because you would think, like, he's got the experience to be like, all right, guys, chill out. You know,
they apparently didn't get that talk from A-Rod that home runs are empty calories and that getting guys over and fundamental baseball is healthy eating.
You really got a putt to win the U.S. Open.
Yeah. I was about to say, and all someone needed to do was print out A-Rod's statistics over his career and just hand it to him on the broadcast and say, Mr. Rodriguez, could you just read through those? Oh, okay. Yeah, you were no better. So
can we take care of one debate, too, by the way? Bunting was not the thing to do in game one. Thank you.
It was not.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Because I was, people were getting at me on that while I was on the air, and I was just like, "You haven't watched baseball in the last 5 years. No one bunts anymore.
Yeah.
Like, stop." Nick Markakis hasn't had a sacrifice since there was a Bush in the White House. Okay, and Dansby had one over the last 2 years. So you know, quit your belly aching. Speaking of our belly aching. We will be back on with you after every Braves postseason game on Facebook. That's facebook.com/929thegame. Facebook.com/929thegame. We'll try to get it as close to the final out as possible so that we can get all three of us on there. It might just only be two of us at any time, but we'll try as much as we possibly can to get as much of us that you can possibly consume. We had a lot of great responses and also a lot of great views for the Red Series. We hope that you join us for the series against the Marlins. Again, after every game, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday, if necessary. And hopefully we're talking about an NLCS preview at this time next week. For Joe Patrick, for Caleb Johnson, I'm Willie P. Wilpelagic. Thank you for listening to Batter Up on 92.9 The Game.